Good morning, and welcome to News Briefing, your daily dive into the headlines shaping our world. I'm Arjav, bringing you the top stories from BBC News, NPR Topics, The New York Times, NDTV, CNBC, and other authoritative sources, ensuring you're fully informed for your day. First, let's take a quick look back at On This Day in History. On May 12, 1949, a pivotal moment in the early Cold War unfolded as the Soviet Union lifted its blockade of Berlin. This marked a significant diplomatic victory for the Western Allies, showcasing the power of sustained international resolve and the success of the Berlin airlift. It's a powerful reminder of how global tensions can be navigated through determined action. And speaking of global tensions, our lead stories today bring us right back to the intricate web of international relations. We'll be focusing heavily on President Trump's recent statements and diplomatic movements, along with a critical look at economic impacts and key political developments both domestically and abroad. Joining me to break down these complex stories is our esteemed reporter, Arohi. Arohi, let's start with President Trump's recent comments regarding the Iran ceasefire. He described it as being on massive life support and unbelievably weak. What's the context here, and what exactly prompted these strong statements?
Thanks, Arjav. Indeed, President Trump's remarks came as a direct criticism of an Iranian counteroffer aimed at formally ending the month-long conflict. His assessment highlights a deep skepticism within the administration regarding the sincerity and efficacy of the proposed terms. The existing ceasefire, which has been fragile at best, appears to be nearing a breaking point from the U.S. perspective, especially with these recent diplomatic exchanges failing to yield a more robust agreement. The unbelievably weak descriptor suggests a profound dissatisfaction with Iran's willingness to commit to a lasting peace, raising concerns about the immediate future of the region's stability and the potential for renewed escalation of hostilities. The underlying tensions that sparked the conflict remain unresolved, and the diplomatic channels, despite ongoing efforts, seem to be struggling to bridge the divide between the two nations' expectations for a comprehensive resolution. This particular counteroffer, according to White House sources, fell far short of what the U.S. was seeking in terms of concessions and guarantees. The frustration is palpable, underscoring challenges in negotiating with a party perceived as recalcitrant. The international community watches closely, as failure of this ceasefire would have broad implications for global oil markets and regional security. The president's blunt language signals the U.S. is not prepared to accept a superficial agreement, emphasizing a substantive, verifiable commitment to peace.
That certainly paints a picture of a very delicate situation. And this comes as President Trump is embarking on a state visit to China today to meet with President Xi Jinping. How do these two major diplomatic endeavors, the China visit and the ongoing Iran situation, intersect or influence each other? And what are the expectations for this high-stakes meeting in Beijing, particularly given the backdrop of the Iran conflict and rising inflation concerns?
The timing of President Trump's visit to Beijing is certainly noteworthy, Arjav, as these two significant foreign policy challenges are intrinsically linked. While the primary agenda for the state visit will undoubtedly focus on trade, economic cooperation, and intellectual property rights, the unfolding situation in Iran will cast a long shadow. China, as a major global power and an important player in the Middle East, could potentially play a constructive role into escalating tensions with Iran, or at least exert its influence. Any discussions with President Xi will likely include an update or an appeal for China's perspective and cooperation on the Iranian issue, even if it's not the primary focus. Economically, the war in Iran has already started to ripple through global markets. A new inflation report, expected shortly, is anticipated to reveal the significant impact on the U.S. economy, primarily through rising energy costs. This will be a key point of discussion for President Trump, as he seeks to secure trade agreements that could potentially offset some of these economic pressures. The administration is keen to demonstrate stability and growth at home, and managing inflation directly tied to international conflicts is a high priority. Therefore, in Beijing, while trade tariffs and market access will dominate, the broader geopolitical landscape, including Iran, will inevitably inform negotiations. The aim will be to find common ground or manage divergence, to maintain global stability that benefits both economies. Public perception of these discussions is also critical, particularly concerning U.S. economic standing and global leadership.
It sounds like a very full diplomatic plate indeed. And on the topic of U.S. relations with China, a new Chicago Council, NPR, Ipsos poll sheds light on how Americans perceive this relationship. What did this poll reveal about public sentiment regarding China, especially concerning tariffs, Iran, and America's standing in the world?
The poll provides some really interesting insights into American public opinion, Arjav. It indicates that most Americans view China primarily as one of the United States' biggest rivals or adversaries, but largely in the context of an economic threat. The focus is less on military confrontation and more on trade imbalances, intellectual property theft, and competition for global economic dominance. When it comes to tariffs, there's a mixed bag of opinions, reflecting the complex economic impact on various sectors and consumers. However, there is a general consensus that China's economic practices need to be addressed. On the Iran issue, while public attention is primarily focused on the direct implications for the U.S. and its allies, there's an underlying awareness of China's role as a global actor, and perhaps an expectation that China could be either a spoiler or a facilitator in achieving peace. Regarding America's world standing, the poll suggests concerns among the public about how U.S. foreign policy, particularly under the current administration, is perceived globally. There's a desire for the U.S. to maintain its leadership role, but also an acknowledgement that this role is being challenged by rising powers like China. The data underscores the complexity of modern foreign policy, where economic competition and geopolitical rivalries are intertwined with public perception and domestic priorities. Essentially, Americans want a strong U.S. position but are also acutely aware of the challenges posed by global competitors and conflicts.
Fascinating data, highlighting the public's nuanced understanding of these complex issues. Now, shifting our gaze to another critical international flashpoint, Ukraine. There are concerning reports that Russian forces continue to attack U.S. firms operating there, and the White House's response has been notably silent. Arohi, what do we know about these attacks, and why is the Trump administration's muted reaction raising concerns?
Reports out of Ukraine are indeed troubling, Arjiv. Facilities tied to prominent U.S. corporations like Coca-Cola, Cargill, and Mondelez appear to have been deliberately targeted in recent Russian strikes. These aren't isolated incidents. There's a pattern suggesting these are not collateral damage but intentional hits on American commercial interests within Ukraine. The deliberate targeting of civilian infrastructure owned by foreign entities breaches international norms and pressures the U.S. by striking at its economic interests abroad. What's particularly concerning, as you mentioned, is the muted response from the Trump administration. There hasn't been the strong public condemnation or clear retaliatory measures expected when U.S. corporate assets are explicitly attacked. This silence has raised red flags among foreign policy analysts and even within Congress. Critics argue that a lack of robust response could be perceived as weakness, potentially emboldening Russia to continue such aggressive actions and undermining the confidence of U.S. companies operating in conflict zones. It also raises questions about the administration's strategic priorities and its commitment to protecting American interests globally, especially when they intersect with geopolitical rivals. The White House has not offered a detailed explanation for its restrained approach, leading to speculation and anxiety about the broader implications for U.S. foreign policy.
A very serious situation unfolding there with potentially far-reaching implications for international business and diplomatic norms. Moving closer to home, new research is shedding light on the economic chilling effect of the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. What are these findings, and how are they impacting local economies and workers?
This new research provides a comprehensive look at the downstream effects of increased immigration enforcement, Arjiv. It finds that intensive ICE raids and the pervasive fear of deportation have significantly disrupted local economies across the United States. The primary impact has been a reduction in work among undocumented immigrants, who, fearing apprehension, are either less likely to seek employment in formal sectors or are forced into less visible, often exploitative, informal labor. This withdrawal from the documented workforce creates labor shortages in certain industries, particularly agriculture and construction, which rely heavily on immigrant labor. Beyond the undocumented community, the research also suggests a potential negative impact on some U.S.-born workers. This can happen in several ways. For instance, if industries relying on immigrant labor contract due to labor shortages, U.S.-born workers in those industries could also lose jobs. There's also evidence of reduced consumer spending in communities heavily impacted by raids, as fearful families reduce their economic activity. The chilling effect extends beyond direct job losses. It creates an atmosphere of uncertainty and fear that discourages investment and economic participation, ultimately hurting the very communities these crackdowns are ostensibly meant to protect or regulate. The report underscores the complex interplay between immigration policy and economic health, suggesting that aggressive enforcement, while achieving its stated goal, comes with significant economic costs that ripple through the broader economy.
A stark reminder of the interconnectedness of policy and economic realities. Now, let's shift our focus across the Atlantic to the UK, where Sir Keir Starmer is making waves with his plans to rebuild Britain's relationship with Europe. Arohi, he delivered a defiant speech outlining his vision. How are his proposals being received in the EU, and what exactly is he pledging?
Sir Keir Starmer's recent speech was a clear and forceful declaration of intent, Arjiv, signaling a significant pivot from the previous government's approach to post-Brexit relations. He unequivocally pledged to put Britain at the heart of Europe, once again, emphasizing a desire for a much closer working relationship with the European Union, moving beyond the current, more distant arrangement. His proposals include strengthening economic ties, fostering closer collaboration on security, and exploring avenues for easier movement of goods and services, without necessarily rejoining the single market or customs union. The language used conveyed a genuine commitment to repairing strained relationships and finding pragmatic solutions to the challenges posed by Brexit. In the EU, his plans are being received with cautious optimism and a degree of relief. Many in Brussels and across European capitals have long hoped for a more constructive and less confrontational stance from the UK. While there's an understanding that a complete reversal of Brexit is off the table, the EU welcomes a partner genuinely interested in rebuilding bridges and finding common ground. There's a strong appetite for stability and predictability, particularly in economic and security cooperation. However, European officials will be looking for concrete proposals and a clear roadmap for how Starmer intends to achieve these closer ties without undermining the foundational principles of the EU. The devil, as always, will be in the details, but initial reception suggests a willingness to engage positively with a Labour government seeking a more harmonious relationship.
An interesting development for post-Brexit Britain. Moving further afield, Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni has been sworn in for a record 7th term. What can you tell us about this election and the implications of his extended rule?
President Yoweri Museveni, at 81, has indeed begun his 7th term in office, ARGEV, extending his already 4-decade-long rule over Uganda. He won the disputed elections held in January, securing another 5 years at the helm. The election results themselves faced widespread criticism, both domestically and internationally, with opposition parties alleging significant irregularities, voter intimidation, and a lack of transparency. Human rights organizations and international observers also voiced concerns over the electoral process, citing restrictions on freedom of assembly and expression, as well as the use of force against opposition supporters. Museveni's extended rule has several implications. Domestically, it reinforces a political landscape that has seen a gradual erosion of democratic space, with critics and opposition figures often facing severe crackdowns. Economically, while Uganda has seen some development under his leadership, concerns persist about corruption, youth unemployment, and the equitable distribution of wealth. Regionally, Museveni has been a significant player in East African politics and security matters, often mediating or intervening in conflicts. His continued tenure means a degree of continuity in these regional dynamics, but also raises questions about stability and potential succession planning in a country with a rapidly growing young population eager for change. His long rule has seen both stability and progress, alongside criticism for authoritarian tendencies.
A significant political development for the African continent. Now, let's turn our attention to India, where geopolitical tensions continue to simmer. India has issued a strong response to China regarding its on-site support to Pakistan's military. What's unfolding there, and what is India's core message?
This situation, Arjav, underscores the persistent regional rivalries and strategic alliances in South Asia. India's recent statement is a direct and pointed response to China's increasing military assistance and presence in Pakistan. Reports indicate that an overwhelming 81% of Pakistan's military hardware is now of Chinese origin, signifying a deep and expanding defense partnership. China's on-site support refers not just to equipment sales but also to technical assistance, training, and potentially the establishment of infrastructure that enhances Pakistan's military capabilities. India views this as a direct challenge to its own security and regional dominance. The core of India's message, often articulated as a concern for its reputation and standing, is a clear diplomatic signal to Beijing that New Delhi is highly sensitive to any actions that could alter the military balance in the region or project Chinese influence into its immediate neighborhood. India's response is an assertion of its own sovereignty and strategic interests, pushing back against what it perceives as an encirclement strategy by China through its alliance with Pakistan. While India's language is diplomatic, it carries the weight of a stern warning, indicating India will actively counter moves that threaten its security or diminish its regional stature. This dynamic remains a key geopolitical tension in Asia.
A very delicate balancing act indeed for regional power dynamics. And on the domestic front in India, the Maharashtra opposition is demanding an all-party meeting over the Prime Minister's austerity appeal. What are the details here, and what far-reaching impacts are being discussed?
The demand from the Maharashtra opposition, led by figures like Sharad Pawar, stems from significant concerns over recent austerity measures and appeals made by the Prime Minister, Arjav. While the full scope of these measures hasn't been entirely laid out, they generally involve calls for fiscal restraint, reduced government spending, and potentially cuts to certain public programs. The opposition is wary that such moves, especially without broader consultation, could have severe repercussions. Sharad Pawar, a veteran politician, specifically highlighted that the Prime Minister's announcements could have far-reaching impacts, particularly on the state's economy and the welfare of its citizens. The opposition fears that austerity could disproportionately affect vulnerable populations, stifle economic growth at the state level, and lead to reduced investment in critical sectors. They argue that an all-party meeting is essential to foster a consensus, ensure transparency, and develop a more inclusive approach to economic management during what is seen as a challenging period. Without such dialogue, the opposition believes the central government's unilateral decisions could exacerbate existing economic inequalities and create social unrest, especially if states are not adequately supported or consulted in the implementation of these austere policies. They are advocating for a collaborative approach to national economic strategy rather than a top-down mandate.
Clear concerns being voiced by the opposition there. Also in India, the government formation in Tamil Nadu is currently unfolding with much drama. What's the latest on Vijay's efforts to rally support, and what's this controversy surrounding an astrologer's appointment?
The political landscape in Tamil Nadu is certainly dynamic, Arjav, with actor-turned-politician Vijay at the center of efforts to form the new government. Following recent elections, no single party secured a clear majority, making coalition building crucial. Vijay, leading his party, has been actively engaging with allies and independent legislators to rally the necessary support to stake a claim as chief minister. This involves intense negotiations, bargaining for ministerial portfolios, and solidifying ideological alignments to ensure a stable ruling coalition. Every vote counts, and the process is being closely watched across the state. Adding to the complexity and public intrigue is a significant controversy that has erupted over the proposed appointment of an astrologer to a key position within the government or a public body. Critics, particularly from secular and rationalist groups, are vehemently opposing this, viewing it as a move that undermines scientific temper, secular principles, and merit-based appointments in governance. They argue that appointing someone based on astrological beliefs to a position of public trust is regressive and inappropriate for a modern democratic state. This controversy has become a contentious talking point, distracting from the core government formation discussions and forcing political parties to take a stance on the role of belief systems versus secular governance in public administration. It vividly illustrates the cultural and political sensitivities that often play out in Indian state politics.
A fascinating blend of political maneuvering and cultural debate. And speaking of Indian politics, new research suggests that welfare isn't winning elections in India like it used to. What's behind this shift in voter sentiment?
This is a crucial shift in India's political narrative, Arjav. For decades, welfare politics, the distribution of freebies, subsidies, and social safety nets, has been a cornerstone of electoral strategy, often proving highly effective in garnering votes, especially from marginalized communities. However, recent trends and new research indicate that while welfare still matters, it's no longer the sole determinant of electoral success. Voters are increasingly sophisticated in their demands. The research suggests a growing aspiration among the Indian electorate for sustainable economic growth, tangible job opportunities, and a sense of dignity that goes beyond handouts. Young voters, in particular, are looking for policies that create pathways to upward mobility, rather than just providing basic sustenance. They want robust infrastructure, quality education, better healthcare, and real employment prospects that allow them to build a future. The narrative is shifting from what the government gives me to what the government enables me to achieve. Political parties that can articulate a vision for inclusive growth, industrial development, and human capital formation are finding greater resonance. This doesn't mean welfare programs are obsolete, but that they need to be complemented by a broader agenda focused on empowering citizens through economic opportunity and a higher quality of life, reflecting a maturing electorate with evolving priorities.
A clear evolution in voter priorities, demanding more than just immediate relief. Now, let's pivot to a major national issue that has become a significant battlefield for the opposition and the center in India, the NEET-UG paper leak. This has caused widespread fury among students. What are the key aspects of this controversy?
This issue has indeed ignited a firestorm across India, Arjav, and has morphed into a significant political flashpoint. The NEET-UG, or National Eligibility Cum Entrance Test for undergraduate courses, is the gateway examination for aspiring medical students. The recent reports of a paper leak prior to the exam have led to widespread outrage and frustration among the lakhs of students who invest years of hard work, time, and financial resources into preparing for it. The integrity of the entire examination process has been called into question. The opposition parties have seized upon this, using it as a major plank to attack the central government. They are demanding a thorough, independent investigation into the leak, accountability from the National Testing Agency or NTA, which conducts the exam, and immediate measures to prevent such incidents in the future. They argue that the leak undermines the meritocracy, jeopardizes the futures of countless deserving students, and exposes systemic failures in the examination system. The center, on its part, is under immense pressure to address these concerns effectively and transparently. This controversy is not just about an exam paper. It's about trust in public institutions, fairness and opportunity, and the very future of the nation's youth. The widespread public anger, particularly from students and their families, has turned this into a major challenge for the government, with calls for widespread reforms and even a re-examination.
And the fallout from this leak is already being felt acutely. We're hearing that the NEET UG has been scrapped. How has this decision been received, and what are students saying about this drastic measure?
The decision to scrap the NEET UG examination, ARGIV, has been met with a mix of reactions, though frustration largely dominates. The president of the Indian Medical Association, or IMA, has welcomed the NTA's decision, viewing it as a necessary step to uphold the integrity of the examination system and restore public trust. From this perspective, a complete nullification and re-examination, while disruptive, is seen as the only fair way forward given the scale of the alleged leak and the compromise of the initial process, prioritizing the fairness of the medical entrance. However, for the lakhs of students who appeared for the exam, the news is devastating. Many aspirants are voicing profound frustration and despair, articulating that 2 years, or even more, of their rigorous hard work and dedication have effectively been wasted. They invested immense time, money, and emotional energy into preparing for an exam that is now rendered null and void. The mental and emotional toll is significant, with many feeling a sense of betrayal and uncertainty about their academic and professional futures. They are now faced with the prospect of re-preparing and reappearing for an exam, often with revised dates and formats, which adds immense stress and anxiety. While the intent behind scrapping the exam is to ensure fairness, the immediate impact on the students is one of profound disappointment and a feeling of injustice, particularly for those who studied diligently and were not involved in any wrongdoing.
A truly heartbreaking situation for so many young people. Shifting gears slightly within the Indian education sector, we also have news regarding two other significant board exam results. Arohi, what are the details on the Haryana HBSE 12th result and the Jammu and Kashmir Board Class 11 result?
Absolutely, Arjiv. On the education front, in other news, there's relief for many students as results for other key examinations have been declared. The Haryana Board of School Education, or HBSE, has released its 12th class result for 2026. Students can now access and download their results online through the official HBSE website. This marks a crucial milestone for thousands of students who have completed their secondary education and are now looking towards higher studies or vocational training. The timely announcement brings an end to their anxious wait and allows them to proceed with their future academic plans. Similarly, the Jammu and Kashmir Board of School Education, JK Bose, has also announced the Class 11 results for the summer zone. These results are available on the official JK Bose website, jkresults.nic.in, where students can check their individual scores and download their mark sheets. The declaration of these results is vital for students in Jammu and Kashmir, as it determines their progression to the next academic year and helps them make informed decisions about their subject choices for Class 12. Both announcements are significant steps in the academic calendar for these regions, providing clarity and direction for countless students and their families.
Good news for those students. Now, let's move back to the U.S. election cycle. With primaries underway, what should we be watching in Tuesday's primaries in Nebraska and West Virginia? Are there any particular races or dynamics that stand out?
Tuesday's primaries in Nebraska and West Virginia offer some interesting political storylines, Arjiv, particularly as parties aim to solidify their candidates for the upcoming general election. In Nebraska, Democrats are focusing on a key House battleground. The outcome here will be crucial in determining which candidate will challenge the incumbent in what is expected to be a highly competitive race. This district has seen shifting demographics and voter sentiment, making it a bellwether for broader trends in the state. The Democratic Party is looking for a strong contender who can energize the base and appeal to independent voters. In West Virginia, the spotlight is on an unusual Senate primary. What makes this primary particularly intriguing is its potential to decide the fate of Omaha's so-called blue dot vote. This refers to the concentration of Democratic voters in an otherwise predominantly conservative state. The Senate primary features a crowded field, and the candidate's ability to mobilize different factions of the party will be tested. The result could have long-term implications for the Democratic Party's strategy in the state and its ability to compete in future statewide elections. Both primaries will be closely watched for turnout, candidate messaging, and any surprises that could indicate shifts in the political landscape ahead of national elections.
Pivotal races indeed, setting the stage for the general election. Now, turning to the world of business and global trade, Adani Ports has announced a significant partnership. Arohi Adani Ports is partnering with Oceaneering to expand offshore operations in Europe. What does this agreement entail, and what is Adani Ports aiming to achieve with this expansion?
This is a strategic move for Adani Ports and Special Economic Zone, or APSEZ, Arjav, as it marks a significant step towards expanding its international footprint and diversifying its service offerings. The partnership with Oceaneering, a global leader in engineered services and products for the offshore energy industry, is designed to bolster APSEZ's capabilities in the European market. The agreement will leverage Oceaneering's expertise in underwater engineering, remotely operated vehicles, and subsea solutions, combined with Adani Ports' extensive logistics and marine infrastructure. APSEZ's broader strategy is to build one of the world's largest integrated marine platforms. This includes expanding across various segments: logistics, offshore support, underwater engineering, and deepwater infrastructure services. By partnering with Oceaneering, Adani Ports aims to capture a larger share of the burgeoning offshore energy market in Europe, particularly in areas like offshore wind, oil and gas exploration, and subsea maintenance. This collaboration will allow them to offer a more comprehensive suite of services, from port operations to highly specialized underwater support, strengthening their competitive position and moving them closer to becoming a global maritime powerhouse. It's a clear indication of their ambition to transition from port-centric operations to a more integrated, full-spectrum marine services provider internationally.
A significant expansion strategy for Adani Ports. Also in business news, the Swiss sneaker company On Holding has reportedly beaten first-quarter expectations, seeing double-digit growth in China, even as a giant like Nike lags. What's driving On's success in a competitive market?
On Holding's strong first-quarter performance is certainly a standout, Arjav, especially when compared to some of the industry giants. The Swiss sneaker company beat Wall Street's expectations on both the top and bottom lines, a testament to its successful strategy. A key driver of this success has been its impressive double-digit growth in China, a market where even established brands like Nike have been experiencing headwinds. Several factors contribute to On's momentum. Firstly, its unique Swiss engineering and focus on performance-oriented running shoes have resonated with a growing segment of consumers worldwide who prioritize comfort, innovative technology, and durability. Their cloud cushioning technology has become a signature feature. Secondly, On has successfully cultivated a premium brand image, appealing to both serious athletes and fashion-conscious individuals who appreciate its minimalist aesthetic and quality. In China specifically, the brand has invested strategically in direct-to-consumer channels, localized marketing campaigns, and collaborations that tap into the country's booming fitness and lifestyle market. This targeted approach has allowed them to gain market share even as larger competitors face supply chain issues, evolving consumer preferences, or geopolitical challenges. Their agility and focus on specific niches have clearly paid off, making them a significant player in the athletic footwear industry.
An impressive rise for On Holding indeed. And finally, in corporate news, there's been quite a bit of drama surrounding GameStop's takeover bid for eBay. Arohi, what happened there, and why did eBay reject GameStop's massive $55 billion proposal?
This has been one of the more unusual and intriguing corporate stories recently, Arjav. GameStop, the video game retailer, made a significant and rather audacious cash and stock takeover bid for the online marketplace eBay, valued at a staggering $55 billion. It was a move that certainly caught the market by surprise, given the differing business models and market capitalizations of the two companies. However, eBay swiftly and decisively rejected the proposal. Their official statement described the offer as neither credible nor attractive. The primary reason cited for the rejection was eBay's severe doubts about how GameStop, a company with a considerably smaller market value and a business model currently undergoing significant transformation, would actually finance such an enormous acquisition. A $55 billion cash and stock deal would require substantial debt financing or a massive issuance of new GameStop shares, which eBay evidently did not believe was feasible or in the best interest of its shareholders. This decision ends what would have been a fascinating, if improbable, merger, and reiterates eBay's commitment to its standalone strategy.
A definitive rejection, bringing that surprising takeover saga to a close. Arohi, thank you for those comprehensive updates on today's top stories.
Always a pleasure, Arjav.
And that wraps up another edition of News Briefing. Before we go, here's a fun fact to leave you with. Did you know that the world's most expensive spice, saffron, is picked by hand from the Crocus sativus flower? It takes approximately 150,000 flowers to produce just 1 kilogram of saffron. This labor-intensive process, coupled with its unique flavor and aroma, makes it a coveted and costly commodity in global markets. Thank you for joining us on News Briefing. We appreciate you choosing us for your daily dose of news and analysis. We'll be back tomorrow with more headlines and in-depth reporting. Until then, have a fantastic day.